homemade slash handmade gifts are more thoughtful in a good way, cheap in a bad way, any of the above. Thoughtful in a good way. Okay, so they want to know what answers I'll accept from a potential match. Thoughtful in a good way. Important, a little, somewhat, very. I would say very.
Today, when you create an online dating profile, it's made up of hundreds, sometimes thousands of little data points that help find the Mr. or Mrs. Perfect that matches you.
I'll click on this guy. He's got a 91% match. Let's look at his photos. Beard, beer, smile. Oh, beautiful sunset. Seems like a nice guy.
Now doctors can use individualized molecular profiles to match patients, not with a new boyfriend, but with the medical care that's right for their body.
So everyone would have the access to individualized therapy best for their cancer, because everyone's cancer is different.
I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, we look at advances in cancer diagnosis, treatment, and prevention. Later in the show, we'll dig into a groundbreaking technique recently recommended by the American Heart Association for treating the worst kind of strokes.
Really, the difference between, you know, walking out of the hospital and going on to enjoy a quality of life versus, unfortunately, rolling out of the hospital or going to a facility or a place where you're going to be dependent on nursing care.
But first, Lance Liotta is a professor and co-director of the Center for Applied Proteomics and Molecular Medicine at George Mason University. He's also a recipient of the State Council of Higher Education for Virginia Outstanding Faculty Award. Lance and his colleagues are at the forefront of medical research that uses molecular profiling of patients for individual cancer care.
This is a new frontier, individualizing therapy and detecting lurking hidden disease by measuring molecules either in the blood, the urine, or by measuring molecules right in a piece of tissue, the biopsy of the patient's cancer.
If we go to a hospital that can analyze our molecular makeup, is that going to specialize the treatment for us?
It's just beginning. We hope that it will be available very soon to the general public. Anyone with cancer would have their special profile, and then you would use that information to decide what is the best therapy for that patient, and if that therapy is not available today, then we would have prearranged with the pharmaceutical companies the availability for that patient to go into, if they volunteer, a clinical trial studying experimental drugs. So everyone would have the access to individualized therapy best for their cancer, because everyone's cancer is different.
So your research is focusing on the molecular identity of individual patients to try to find the particular a cure for their cancers.
That's right. Our team is a team of inventors, and we invent technology, and then we apply it to three ways in which molecular profiling or biomarkers can be used in disease. The first is prevention. Second is early detection, when the tumor or the disease is really early and you can treat it very well. And the third is after the cancer has spread through the body, can we molecularly profile the patient's metastasis and say, this is the best therapy for you? So, prevention, early detection, and individualized therapy.
What's the use of prediction? What we really want are cures once we know we have it, right?
Not necessarily. We would love to be able to stop the cancer even before it begins. So, for example, breast cancer starts as small growths inside the milk ducts of the woman, and they grow for many, many years, but they do not invade out of the milk duct. They stay inside there. Then eventually, some of them become invasive breast cancer. So, we're treating patients with a repurposed low toxicity drug called chloroquine that kills those early stage premalignant lesions. Now, those premalignant lesions are accepted by all scientists as being the precursors to invasive cancer. So if we could just kill all the premalignant lesions that are lurking in her milk ducts, then we could suppress all those lesions and stop them from becoming cancer in the first place. Otherwise, if we're treating the patient after they already have cancer, then it's much harder.
Given that there are so many clinical trials with very promising initial results that often don't pan out, can you rate yours? How long you've been going, how many people in it, what you think shows promise here?
Well, we're involved in several different clinical trials, and we have the early stage cancer trial that I mentioned, and that is going very well. We just need a few more patients to finish that trial. Then we have another trial for individualized therapy for women with metastatic breast cancer. It's a very terrible problem because the patients who have advanced breast cancer, we don't know what to treat them with. The doctors have tried everything, and they just essentially have to throw a dart at a dartboard, decide what therapy to give the patient next. We biopsy the metastasis of those patients, and then we profile it using our technologies. We have one technology that we can microdissect and pluck out the tumor cells so we can look at only those. We then can look at the circuitry of the cancer cells and see which molecules are firing, which proteins are driving that person's metastasis. And then we go to a panel of physicians and doctors to look at our data and combine it with genetic data on that same patient, what genes are defective in that patient. And our panel then determines what therapy to best give that individual woman. And then we give that recommendation to the physician. It's called the Side Out trial. It's been very, very successful. We've published it. Had significant extensions of survival for the patients with that individualized therapy.
How long do you mean is successful extension of life?
Some of these patients, many, many months, and some are still in remission. But we can't really say. We just know that we're making a difference for them at this point.
I remember reading about doctors who are experimenting with differentiating chemotherapies for different patients. And they have kind of a mouse lab where they have maybe 100 different mice with different forms of cancer. They apply the chemo to it to see which ones are great for this particular cancer. In your laboratory, how are you experimenting with the array of possible remedies for a given molecular makeup?
Well, in that method that you mentioned, some are applying it to individual patients. You take the patient's tumor and you have a piece of it and you grow it in a mouse. And then as it continues to grow, you can then give candidate therapies to that mouse and see if it helps the patient's tumor. We're not doing that exactly. We're not doing those kinds of mouse predictive models. And that's because we're looking at multiple different molecules and how they interact and how they drive the cell. Because if you have one target and you're going after it, it may not be really driving the cancer. Something else really may be driving the cancer. Or cancer cell can easily detour around that when you give a therapy. And so we try to get a picture of the whole network. Now, another issue, when you take the tumors out and grow them in the animal, then you're not getting the patient's surrounding tissue, which we look at, not just the cancer cells, but all the cells around it. They're either fighting the cancer or they're helping the cancer. So we mainly use animal models to study cancer cells, but not to as a predictive method for individualizing patients.
Where are you getting your patients? Which hospital in what locale are you working in tandem with?
Our patients come from the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area, or in some of our trials, we have patients from all over the country, different centers throughout the country, from California to local areas.
Are most women with breast cancer, with serious breast cancer that is sort of intractable, are those mostly the women like Angelina Jolie who have that particular deadly predisposition toward it?
No. Women who have advanced, very serious breast cancer, only about 15% of them have that mutated gene or have a mutated gene that we can identify. Majority of breast cancer, we do not know the specific predisposition gene that causes that in the first place. And so that means that there's many ways genetically to make a breast cancer.
For people with breast cancer or loved ones of people with breast cancer, any advice?
The first advice is to make sure that the patient does not succumb to alternative therapies that are they read about on the web, and then do not get the advanced medical therapy that we have today. Then make sure that you talk to your doctor about, is she or he doing the molecular profiling on your tumor that we know that any doctor can now order from companies and services from universities to get the best way to predict what the therapy is for that patient. Most physicians know about all this and are using it, but it's important for the patient to ask about it. And then the third thing is, if the tumor metastasizes and the patient comes back and the doctor says, "I'm sorry, the tumor has recurred," then it's very important for the doctor and the patient to consider some of the newer experimental therapies that are available by clinical trials. There's so many exciting new therapies that could benefit many, many patients on the trial or future patients if the trial is successful, and we're just not getting enough patients for those trials.
But we patients are ignorant. We have no clue what trial we should go into.
That's correct. Now, there are certain companies that are forming around that to advise patients and to advise doctors of what trials are out there. But simply today, if the patients would ask their doctor, what clinical trials would you recommend that I can consider? The patient, of course, doesn't have to volunteer for those trials, but some subset of patients have benefited tremendously from those trials. And importantly, they're making a difference for future women.
And if you had end-stage cancer, would you join such a trial?
I would, yes, I would. But it's not for everyone, because they might decide that they would rather, instead of fighting it, to enjoy the remaining time that they have. Right. It's an individual decision for each person. But if we could at least have that dialogue with every patient who potentially eligible for a trial, they're going to end up benefiting all those future patients. Because if you imagine you have 100 patients, you give a new therapy, it works in 15% of those patients, you would say, is that drug a failure? It's a failure in the general trial, but it's a success for those 15%. If you could have just identified that 15% ahead of time, treat them with the right drug, not even give the drug with its side effects to the other 85%, then that's the future that we want to see. And then the next 15%, so all the 100% of patients are going to be subdivided in getting the right therapy.
Well, Lance Liotta, this is fascinating. Thank you for talking with me on With Good Reason.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Sarah.
Lance Liotta is a professor and co-director at the Center for Applied Proteomics and Molecular Medicine at George Mason University. He's also a recipient of the State Council of Higher Education for Virginia Outstanding Faculty Award. Coming up next, surgeries that mean the difference between running and never walking again.